I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. And welcome to minute 73 of season 6 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Richard Dunham of Acura Minute. Did I get that right? Welcome back to the show.
You got it.
All right.
Thanks for having me. I try.
Thank you for being willing to come back and talk more about the deal that Potter is trying to put through.
You know, we're not afraid of success here.
No,
the Movie Rob Minute.
No, not at all. Not at all. So minute 73 begins with George looking at his hand and ends with George having Potter's words reverberate in his mind. So we basically ended things yesterday with Potter convincing George that he should take a little bit of time to think about this and then come back with a positive answer so that you'll get this. Potter is very confident.
Seal the deal.
That's right. Seal the deal. Potter is extremely confident in his, I guess, negotiations ability. You know, he doesn't doubt for a second that
he's making him an offer he can't refuse in his
own. That's right. That's right. And this is, 25 years before that offer is really made. You know, maybe he should have taken a horse's head and sent it over to George's place. Maybe that would help.
Martini's goat. Yeah.
There you go. I think that Martini's goat would be something you would send to Martini, not necessarily to George. I don't think there's any animals that I can think of that George has been actively pursuing throughout this movie. So he's not really much of he's not a pet person. You know, if anything, no. I think that if George had a pet, I would say he would have some sort of like a small dog. That was what I would think.
A small dog? I'm thinking like a lab, something like that.
Okay. All right. I can see that. Like a medium-sized dog. We're not talking.
Yeah.
I don't think he would have a Doberman or something, very aggressive.
No. Something easygoing, I would think. But
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe like a hunting dog, right? So he likes.
Okay. I can see him with a dog.
He likes to walk barefoot through the grass, right? And,
That's true. Violet doesn't like that, but he does. Yes.
Yeah.
Barefoot through the grass. What are you, crazy? Yes.
Do you know how long, how far it is? Bedford Falls? Yeah.
Yeah. Violet is not. So. Violet likes indoor activities, not outdoor activities.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what we can assume from there.
we didn't talk yet about the different kinds of neckties. George has what is, his suit is pretty, wouldn't look out of place today, including his necktie. It looks pretty modern.
Right. The thing is, his lapels on his shirt look a little strange here.
The lapels are a little wide, and he's got those two breast pockets, which are a little weird. So his coat is a little bit pinched at the waist.
Yeah,
it's pretty long, but I mean,
you know what? It looks like a hunting. You mentioned before maybe that, you know, he'd be out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, maybe that's a hunting jacket.
It could be.
Well, again, George is not. George is thrifty. You know, he's not going to be going and buying expensive clothing and stuff like that. You know, he's going to take what he can get. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if this jacket has holes in it somewhere. You know, like small holes, not big holes.
Patches on the elbows. I can see that.
Yeah, I mean, I think last week or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, someone mentioned, you know, my guest mentioned that maybe that's the one thing missing from this jacket, you know, elbow patches. You know, he's missing a pipe also that would make him look like a, you know, professor.
Yeah, the Sherlock Holmes cap.
Yeah.
Too. That wouldn't look out of place. Kind of like a fox. It's almost like a fox hunting outfit.
Yeah, more or less.
But in comparison to like Mr. Potter and his valet or whatever you'd call it, his butler, they're like, I mean, they look like 19th century like funeral workers or something.
Well, again, that works well tie. That works well for the butler. He's the guy digging the graves. He knows where the bodies are buried. That's right. You know, Potter says to him, "Okay, you know, go plant that in Potter's field." And he's like, "All right, I'm going to go do it. Don't ask me later what really is going on there." You know. So
did we know who did the costumes?
It's something that you can easily. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we mentioned it during the first few days of this season. The costumes were by Edward Stevenson. He did the costume. He has 203 IMDb costume designer credits. Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, the final ones being numerous Lucy Ricardo stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There was a TV series, and then the Lucy show. He did two. Two TV series and a TV movie from Lucy called Lucy in London. And he did 36 episodes of I Love Lucy also as a costume designer. So yeah, he was her choice for the person doing all of the designing that she needed.
He did Citizen Kane and the Magnificent Ambersons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it says in IMDb that he spent 18 years doing designing for Lucille Ball. So okay, wow. that sort of makes sense. and he did win an Oscar for the movie The Facts of Life. Which was actually a hilarious movie. Did you ever see it, by any chance?
I don't think I have.
It's what with Bob Hope and Lucille Ball.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is that when he started working with Ms. Ball?
No, this was 1960, so he had already worked with her before.
Oh, okay.
But so obviously they brought him in for that. You know, he shared his Oscar with Edith Head. You know, the reigning queen of the Oscars.
Yeah, the queen. Yeah. So her, there's a nice, her last credit was Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid. And there's a nice dedication to her in that movie because she did the costumes for all of, you know, so many movies that particular movie actually pays tribute to. So.
Right. Oh, well, interesting. Yeah, I did not remember that fact. And no, so I like Potter's outfit. You know, the question is whether that's modern for this time, or if it's something that's still, you know, vintage.
Yeah. Yeah, I have the feeling it's old fashioned even for 1934 or 5,
right.
Whatever this is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we get another, like, we get a view of more stuff on his desk. Like, even like you thought the stuff that we had seen on his desk was weird enough. There's like something at the edge of his desk that's like even more outlandish. I don't know exactly what it looks like. There's a bell in there in between two kind of tusks that are maybe candle holders. It's wild.
Do you think that that's like to call his secretary to come in?
He's got maybe in the olden days, but he's got like the intercom that we've seen him use, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we did talk about this last week, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago. No, I think it was last week. You know, we noticed that we were trying to figure out what it is, and we assumed that it was just the bell that he was ringing, you know, to help angels get their wings. I don't
Sure. Hey, dig me. I'm handing out wings.
Or maybe he's the opposite. Maybe he has a contraption that takes away the wings of
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
you know, whenever
Oh, and
I
he's got, I just noticed there's like a little mallet.
yes.
Oh, wow. That he can use to strike the bell. That's wild.
Yeah, no, he's got some very interesting things in his office, no question about that. And I mean, I love the way that, I mean, this minute begins. George is shaking Potter's hand, and then he's looking at his hand as he's doing it, and he's trying to decide, you know, he's trying to figure out, is this really my hand that's shaking my arch enemy's hand? You know, like, whose hand
What
is
did I
that?
just do?
And
Yeah.
that's right. What is this?
How did I wind up here?
That's right. I
This is
think I
not my beautiful
he's
life.
saying he's saying I spoke I smoked I smoked a little too much pot yesterday. You know, what am I doing here? And then
Well,
he
how did I get here?
that's right. And then he like disengages his hand, and then he looks at his hand as if now his hand is tainted. And then he like wipes it on it on his like he flexes it back and forth, you know, flexes his hand a little bit, and then I guess to make sure that it's
Yeah.
still working after touching, you know, death. And then, you know, he wipes his hand on his jacket, you know, to like get that dirty stench, that dirty feel off of it or something like that. And then
And
we
I would expect Potter to react to that, but it
yeah.
doesn't seem like Potter reacts until like George starts speaking.
Well,
Like if I, but if I saw
Potter said
someone
last
wipe their
week that
hand.
nobody likes me and I don't care. So, you know, I don't think Potter would easily be offended by that. He's more offended that his manipulations aren't working than anything else.
Yeah, okay.
You know. And then we can see on Jimmy Stewart's face, you know, George has this quick a flood of thoughts and a flood of realization. And then he goes, whoa, wait a second. He goes, no, now wait a minute here. I don't need 24 hours. I don't have to talk to anybody. I know right now, and the answer is no. No, doggone it, no. And then he turns to him and goes, you sit around here and you spin your little webs and you think the whole world revolves around you and your money. Well, it doesn't, Mr. Potter. In the whole vast configuration of things, I'd say you were nothing but a scurvy little spider. You. And then, like, he loses. He does, I think he wants to stop himself from going too far. You know, even though it's possible that in 1934 he went too far by calling him a you know, scurvy little spider. I don't know.
A scurvy little spider. Can spiders get scurvy? I mean, scurvy is like when you don't get enough like vitamins, right? From like vitamin C and stuff, right? So fruit isn't usually part of like a spider's diet, right? So I don't.
Right. So I actually have information about scurvy. It's also known as Müller's disease, Cheadle's disease, Barlow's disease, hypoascorbemia, or just easily, as you just said, a vitamin C deficiency. So it's a disease that results in the lack of vitamin C. Early symptoms of deficiency include weakness, fatigue, sore arms and legs. And if you don't have treatment, you have a decreased number of red blood cells. You could get gum disease. Your hair can change. You can get bleeding from your skin. And you know, it can get if it gets worse, you know, your body won't heal as quickly, you know, when you get like cuts and scrapes and stuff like that, the wound healing. It sometimes can affect people's personalities. And in the end, most people who die of scurvy basically die of some sort of infection, or they bled out too much, or whatever it is from the whole thing. You know, it's scurvy is something that you always hear like in pirate movies, isn't it?
Yeah, because that, you know, that's oftentimes in, you know, long ship voyages, they didn't have sufficient stores of fresh fruit, specifically. So that was scurvy was always a danger. And that's why the British kind of isn't it that they introduced the taking lime with gin, because that was a way to fight scurvy.
Yeah, well, they would give them lemon juice. In 1753, a surgeon in the Royal Navy called James Lind, he is the one who realized that the way to combat scurvy, because most times ships would come back with half of the people dead from scurvy, right? And so he realized that w the way to treat it is using citrus fruit. And it took a long time. It took another 40 years till they realized that what they need, all they need to do was give lemon juice to
So when did he identify when 40
in
years from when?
1753.
1753.
And they only started using it by giving lemon juice in 1795. So yeah, it could be a problem. The question is, do you think scurvy is still something that many people deal with these days?
I mean, it's such a well-known treatment or prevent, you know, it's well known that you just need to eat fruit like to prevent it, right? I
Exactly.
don't think it's, yeah, I don't think it's really that.
Right. So
I
basically,
could be wrong.
the research I did is that the only places that you really find it are places where, you know, people are already dying of starvation and malnutrition.
So it's just like one more thing on top of.
That's right. You know, and that's the type of thing where people would get like you know, beriberi and pellagra and things like that, which you know, hopefully in the future at some point
There's a
I'll talk
like
about
other
the
vitamin
Bridge of the River
deficiencies,
Kwai, where
right?
they talk about beriberi. You know.
Right. Are those basically other vitamin deficiencies?
Yeah. They're micronutrient deficiencies. So places where you know, where people are starving, stuff like that, those are the places where this happens. Because even breast milk has vitamin C in it. So anyone who's being breastfed, you know, is going to be getting enough vitamin C in their diet.
As
Unless,
long as the mother
and I was going to say, unless the
is
mother has the
nourished,
same
yeah.
issue. Nowadays in Western society, it's rare in adults, but it usually affects either young children or the elderly.
Yeah,
So,
makes sense.
definitely. Some of the symptoms
But can
are
spiders get it?
well,
It's a
George
good
seems to think
alliteration,
so.
anyway.
That's right. George seems to think that spiders can. You know, so why not? Again, I think it goes back to what we were talking about earlier this week, that you know, the lack of being able to use colorful metaphors, they had to just make some very interesting make up some interesting you know, things to say. Oh, especially when you can use alliteration. So yeah, that seems to work. And then it's just really funny, you know, because George stops himself. He goes, "You." And then he just says, "And that goes for you too." By point, he points to the you know, to Lurch in the background, and he's had enough, and you know, he like staggers back a little bit, and then you know, opens the door, And, you know, we see the secretary starting to walk towards him, and he goes, "And it goes for you too."
So this is the secretary that Potter was talking to on the intercom when he told her like to make the congressman wait
That's right.
and to get George Bailey.
That's right. That's right.
So his I have a question about where is Mr. Potter's office? Is this in the bank that he took over after the bank run?
My thought is yes, but we'll have to wait, I think 2 weeks till we actually get into the bank, and then we'll know better. But I mean, what it actually, you know what? When he opens the door, yes, it is the bank. You can see because when George opens the door to leave, we get a shot of people walking back and forth in the back, and it does look like a bank. And on the door,
So,
it says Henry F. Potter, President.
president. So he became president when he took control of the bank,
Yeah, which makes sense.
right?
Yeah.
So what did he, where was his office? So he,
Where was his office beforehand?
where was his office before? And like, so he decided, like, what was, like, why did he decide to like move his office into like this new business property or this new
Because they were willing
acquisition?
to give him a death's head
Pocket watch.
pocket watch. There you go.
It came to the office,
That's right.
yes.
That's right. You know, they made Potter an offer he couldn't refuse. You know, they said, "Hey, we're gonna give you a death's head pocket watch." He's like, "I'm there."
Once you buy our shares for 50 cents on the dollar, yeah. You probably bought those for cheaper, right?
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah, I mean it's interesting. It's a very, very interesting question because we never see his office beforehand. We always see him at somewhere else. You know, whether it's at the Bailey, building and loan, or where else did we see him
Or
along
in
the
his
way,
carriage.
or his carriage, right? But you see, I'm still wondering how he got to the second floor of the Bailey building and loan. That's my question.
Lurch.
Well,
It's a lurch.
but that's why I think that he's faking it.
Oh.
I always picture him, having the wheelchair stop at the bottom of the stairs, looking both ways to make sure no one's looking, and then standing up, picking up the
I
chair,
think
carrying it up with Lurch.
Lurch is like the David Prowse character in A Clockwork Orange, right? Like the bodybuilder who's strong enough to like carry the wheelchair.
But he needs to carry the wheelchair and Mr. Potter. Again, unless he's faking it. So, all right, it's possible. It's very possible. When George leaves and he sees the secretary, do you notice how the secretary like bends out? She sort of does like a limbo to try to get out of George's way. Because she like bends her body.
She seems unfazed.
Yeah. She's like, okay,
Like this is just, yeah,
another
another
person
day in
leaving
the
Mr.
life.
Potter's office this way.
Yes, yeah, spitting and shouting. Yeah, okay.
That's right. That's it. And George kept the cigar, so you got to give him credit for that.
Yeah.
He didn't wait
He's
to.
finished with it by the time he gets home.
Well, we're going to get there in a second because so the scene changes and now we're in their home. Okay, Mary seems to be fast asleep. George, is outside of the door. Turns off the light and then walks into the room. Okay. Now, my assumption is that this is not immediately after leaving Potter. I think, and maybe we'll talk about it tomorrow, but because I sort of have some proof that this is a few hours later. He's been walking
Yeah,
around.
we see the time tomorrow.
That's right. That's right. We see the clock.
Spoilers.
Yes. Come back tomorrow to find out what time the clock says. And
Right.
so basically like we see Mary sleeping and he is very careful because he doesn't want to wake her up, so he turns off the lights and then he enters the room and then we start hearing in George's mind the words of Potter reverberating in his mind. And he goes,
yeah.
You wouldn't mind living in the nice house in town, buying your wife a lot of fine clothes, going to New York on a business trip a couple times a year. You know, so he's pretty much torn up about the fact that he had this great opportunity and chose to not take the opportunity merely because he's someone who has integrity. which is something that Potter didn't expect. You know, Potter assumed that he was going to be able to somehow, you know, convince George to take up his offer. But alas, it didn't happen.
No.
Potter isn't as smart as he thought he would be with people like George. What can he do?
And so we see as he closes the door, we see there's like a tie rack on the back of the bedroom door. Mm-hmm. And we see another one of his ties.
Right. I mean, there aren't that many ties there.
No, there's his extra tie. His other tie.
He's got like two ties, maybe three. You know, and I love how in movies when people turn off the lights or even when someone is turning either up or down the sound on the radio, it doesn't really change. It changes in their world, but not for us. You know, so here he turns off the light, but there's still tons of light coming into this room from the window. You know, it's
turning
moonlight.
Off the light for the staircase.
Yeah, for sure.
The hallway,
for sure.
The front hall.
But my point is that, you know, it's not as if she's sleeping in the pitch dark. Like if I can, I prefer to sleep in the pitch dark. You know, it drives my wife nuts. You know, I'm willing to close the shades. You know, have it completely dark. You know, I don't need any light. And she likes to have a little bit of light coming in or anything like that. So, you know, when I see these types of things in movies, it just drives me crazy. Because I say, okay, you know, she's sleeping, but we still see the moonlight shining on her face.
Yeah, and you can see there's obviously like... the blinds aren't drawn, but looks like there's probably lace curtains because you can
see like flowers.
The shadows.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can see the shadows on the wall are actually moving
right
a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, we don't know what time of year this is.
True.
So the assumption is it's not winter. Because actually, well, we saw Martini move in.
If we guess that it's soon after Martini moves in,
right,
we have some clue about the weather.
Right, my guess it's probably like springtime. That's what I would say. You know, maybe late spring, but that's just a pure guess. There's no education involved in that, so it's not an educational guess. okay, so that's pretty much all I have for this minute. We'll get more into what's going on in this room tomorrow. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute, Richard?
One other thing on Potter's desk was like on the right side of his desk was that huge like desk lamp that mm-hmm. looks like
it has a bowling ball on top of it.
Yeah, it's like it looks like it could be like a black light. Something. It's like maybe his the portrait air Mr. Potter's portrait is like has some weird colors that show up under black light. That's why he has that there.
Okay. I'm not too interested in black lighting Potter's office to see what goes on there.
And then he's got like this big horn like on top of the like a row of books like on the side table by the door too. It's a little bit weird. Just a ton of like weird stuff in his office.
Well, I think it's stuff from all around the world. I think that's the idea. I mean, the bowling ball looks like it has like I would say it would be something from like China or something like that. That would like be my guess. Because of the
yeah, maybe
the you know it looks like it has maybe a dragon or a lion on the you know on the design. So, you know, Potter, whether he travels or not, people bring him nice gifts from around the world. You know, he sits and waits for people to bring him, you know, what are they called? Platitudes, you know, when they come visit him. I just came back from visiting.
Tributes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I just came back from visiting
the far east,
and I'm bringing you this bowling ball from China. You know, what can you do with it? Well, I have this lamp that doesn't work.
This huge desk. On top. Yeah, which is just, there's so much real estate on this desk.
That's right.
Thank you.
That's right. You know, we need to find someone who knows enough about antiques that could tell us. Okay, so the death's head thing that comes from Africa, and you know the contraption he uses for the bells, you know, comes from England, and you know, so we know from all the different places around the world, you know, that to show how worldly Henry Potter really is, or pretends to be, for that matter.
Yeah.
Right. So, okay, every Wednesday we have a segment called It's a Wonderful Wednesday, where the idea behind this segment is that, you know, in the 77 years since this movie came out, there have been tons of areas of media that have copied the general premise of the movie of what would happen if a beloved character no longer existed. You know, how would things change and stuff like that. So, basically, every week I find one of these remakes, and we discuss it briefly. So I was trying to find something that I thought you might be interested in, and you know, we spoke a little bit in the green room, and I now regret partially my decision, you know, because I could have gone a different way that might have made you a little happier, but I apologize for that. But I decided to.
No worries.
No, it doesn't matter. This is what we have.
You know, it was
exactly more or less, Richard. So, I actually, one of the movies that came out that takes this idea and tries to reuse it is the sequel to the movie Richie Rich, which is called Richie Rich's Christmas Wish. Which came out in 1998. It's the sequel to the big
Macaulay
budget.
Macaulay Culkin?
Well, no. Macaulay Culkin was in the original Richie Rich. The sequel, basically no one comes back from the original for the sequel. You have a child actor named David Gallagher who plays Richie Rich. And the whole premise here is that, you know, Richie Rich gets into trouble. Surprise, surprise. You know, that never happens in the comic book. And, you know, everyone always forgives him because he's this little rich kid. But in the movie, so he feels bad. And he happens to meet up afterwards with one of the people that live in their mansion, who is a professor that is constantly inventing things. And he has invented a wish machine that if you, any wish that you make will come true. And so, you know, and there are some bugs in the system. And the first thing Richie asks for is a pie, and it actually gives him a pigsty. So we see like it creates this little pig pen that Richie is stuck in, you know, with pigs and mud and stuff like that. And then, so he decides after, being accused by his cousin of causing problems, his cousin's name is Reggie Van Doe. And yep. So yep. He decides that maybe life would be better for everybody if he never existed. So that's what he wishes for. And, you know, he then finds himself in the mansion, but no one seems to recognize him. No one seems to know who he is. His cousin was then adopted by his parents, and his cousin rules the everyone with an iron fist, always complaining, you know, trying to, you know, doing what Potter would do, I guess you could say. And so the whole point of the premise of the movie is that Richie Rich needs to find a way in this new world that he's listening, that he's taking, that he's now in. He has to find this this scientist who was the one who created you know, this wishing machine.
Yeah.
So he ends up getting help with from Cadbury, you know, who in the real future or in the real thing, Cadbury's his butler. But he goes in and finds him because Cadbury continued his singing career and was part of a grunge band. And he ends up getting his help to try and find this professor who's played by Eugene Levy, who I thought was pretty funny in the movie. The movie itself is pretty bad. You know, it's
so you actually subjected yourself to this.
Yes,
movie.
I did.
You didn't just like read the summary.
No. I'm a completionist. I sat and watched this movie today, just to be able to be able to talk to you and say and discuss it. You know, I've seen bad movies too. You know, I could probably say that I've seen more bad movies than good movies. With the, you know, I've seen close to 11,000 movies and review them on my website. So, you know,
yeah, especially I see younger people like my daughter and her friends, like they see my Letterboxd scores and they're like, wow, you score movies pretty high. My response is, I don't think you've seen a truly bad movie.
That's right.
You don't know what a half star movie really looks like.
That's right.
Just count your blessings.
Yes, I've seen, because one of my pet peeves is that if I start a movie, I have to finish it. Doesn't matter how bad it is. You know, I can't turn it off. You know, and if it's bad, I won't watch it again. You know, that's it. I know that I've seen movies where I hated them and wrote a bad review of it and had the writers, you know, respond to me complaining, you know, that how come I'm not letting other people have a chance to form their own opinions of it.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Called Don's Plum, came out in 2001.
Yeah, I was about to say, because that's the only one I don't
that you've never heard of. Yes, exactly. I saw Toby this a few McGuire. Years ago, and like you have Kevin Connolly's in it, Tobey Maguire, Marissa Ribisi, Jeremy Sisto. You know, there were a lot of names that are recognizable that were in it. And like I said, I gave it a really, really bad,
so it was
bad review. And, well, I got someone, you know, to come comment on my site.
One of the six writers. Wow. So it was filmed in like 95, 96, but it was like,
they held it
held up.
They held
because,
it up.
Yeah, the stars were sued because, according to this, is they'd only agreed to star in a short film and not a feature film.
Mm, okay.
That's weird.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
I wrote this review in September of 2015, and one of the writers, Dale Wheatley, was the one who wrote to me.
Wow.
I'll read what he wrote. He goes, wow, I know our little movie I wrote, produced, and even acted a little bit in Don's Plum can provoke a powerful response, but yours is almost malicious. I'm glad that you had a chance to see it and that you agreed that it is wrong to have this film censored. If you'd like to read more from the filmmaker's perspective about what happened between us, the filmmakers, and Toby and Leo, check out, and then he put up the website. And if you'd like to see some great reviews of the film, check out IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes. Some people actually love this movie. Maybe you just didn't get it.
Wow.
So, yeah. What can I tell you? he never came back after free. That.
Yeah, you can. Anybody can watch it with free of charge.
There you go.
Wheatley is the one. Yeah. Yeah, seems like he's the guy. He's the guy. Yeah. Dale, in 2014, Dale Wheatley published an open letter to DiCaprio, right? And then he uploaded the film so that it could be streamed for free.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's a link to it's on archive.org.
There you go. All right. So on that note.
But Richie Rich's Christmas Wish.
Yeah.
You would say is
it's better than Don's Plum. How's that? Not by it's a silly movie, but I did like the way that it takes the premise of It's a Wonderful Life and applies it to Richie Rich's life. I mean, as a kid I remember reading tons of Richie Rich comics. So, you know, it was nice to see, you know, what a world without Richie Rich would be like. And that's what they did here.
You got Martin Mull and Eugene right. Levy.
Well, Martin Mull and Leslie Ann Warren both play Mr. and Mrs. Rich.
Richard Rich and
Regina Rich.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it was fun watching it, but it's not a good movie at all. That's what it comes down to. But it does fit in with It's a Wonderful Wednesday. that's the point. That's what we need here. All right. So Richard, you want to tell people once again where they can find you?
You can go to my website, dunhamrc.com, and you'll find links to my two podcasts, Akita Minute and Ghibli Minute.
All right. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe to any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter, which is for some reason now known as X. The site formerly known as Twitter, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.